Win stacks of cash by entering the 150K Crack the Code giveaway, brought to you by your local paper, now through July 14th. Look for the code on page A2. Then visit 150kgiveaway.com and submit your entry. You could win the grand prize of $100,000. Grab the paper every day. Get the code on page 2A and improve your chances to win tons of weekly cash prizes. Visit 150kgiveaway.com for details.
I'm Jim Weicker, a business writer with the Columbus Dispatch. I'm here with Doral Chenoweth, a Dispatch videographer, and Yaramir Steiner, founder of Steiner & Associates, one of three developers of Easton Town Center. We're here to talk with Yaramir in anticipation of Easton's 20th anniversary, June 30th.
It's been 20 years now, Yaramir, since Easton Town Center opened. Is it, as you look around now, is it what you envisioned 20 years ago?
It's more than what I envisioned. It's much more.
And how so?
I think that the integration of offices, we started on the phase one, clearly exceeded totally our expectations. We started about 60,000 square foot of offices, frankly more to frame the space, the park, so it felt good. Not because we thought that the office was going to be a big moneymaker. And here we are, 20 years later, we have, you know, 500,000 square foot of offices that are in the town center, around the town center, plus everything outside. And oddly, I mean, even from 3-4 years ago, their attractiveness exceeded our expectations again. I mean, today, suddenly, office spaces within walking distance of the town center are gold. I mean, they are very much in demand. You know, I mean, even a mile away is not the same thing. You know, they want to be here.
As you look in Easton, do you wish the offices were closer to the town center, or do you have plans to put offices closer to the retail?
No, we are going to densify Easton's fabric with more offices within walking distance. I mean, I cannot get the offices who are not next door to move here, but we are going to, I think where before we would have surface parked our offices, now we always deck park them just for density so that they can be closer to the energy center of the project.
Easton is beautiful. It's been a success. But is there something you would have done differently 20 years in?
I think we'd have integrated the residential much earlier. Now we are adding a residential, I mean, we have residential around Easton, but we do not have so far integrated residential. That means built within the town center on top of the retail. And we are remedying this with this new phase we are developing on the north side. And our future plans also create lots of residential in the immediate vicinity of the town center. And 20 years ago, when we introduced the offices, that was revolutionary enough. Actually, people do not know that, but we had planned some residential townhomes along the garages, and that's why we had kept some space in case one day we do it, but we never did it. That was too daring at the time. I mean, the offices were daring enough without putting apartments in the middle of a shopping center. I mean, today that has become very common.
When Easton got underway in Easton Town Center in 99, in what ways was it novel or revolutionary? Now, lifestyle centers, town centers, are more common. But in what ground do you think Easton broke?
Easton showed that an open air environment, you know, mimicking the urban fabric, could function in a four season climate. Until then, open air projects were limited to places like Southern California, Phoenix, Arizona, or maybe Florida, never at this scale. And well, there's the Old Orchard, maybe you can mention in Chicago, open air. But I mean, this project established that you can create a regional destination project in a place where there's 40 inches of snow every year, and it works. So that was one rule we broke. And frankly, many projects after that in the United States came and visited Easton, and that gave them the confidence to go open air, even in more easier climates. Because some people were concerned doing open air even where the temperatures were okay. So to see it in Columbus gave them the confidence. This open air was that these open spaces were actually the anchoring of the project. It was not the tenants, but it was the public spaces that were the drivers of the traffic. And because we had these open spaces, then we introduced the anchoring with dining and entertainment. So that was the second biggest innovation in dining and entertainment, introducing in areas, because dining and entertainment could not be done in an enclosed mall. I mean, you will never take your significant other for a celebration inside a mall and sit in a restaurant. I mean, even in English, in French, in many languages, we always say going out. You know, we go out somewhere. We go to the short north. We go to the village in New York. We go, you know, to the Greek town in Detroit. I mean, we go out to places. So creating these open-air environments created the opportunity to create an out, you know, in places. And so creating this collection of restaurants and entertainment became an anchor.
You had done Cocoa Walk by the time you got here. Were there other models that you looked at? Something in particular that was the inspiration for Easton?
There were three projects maybe in the country. Cocoa Walk, Irvine Spectrum, and project in San Diego, whose name escapes me now, an open-air project with the cinema. These were the three projects in 1990s, I mean, you know, late 90s, that were the only projects where open-air, they all had a cinema, and they all had a bookstore. So these were kind of the inspiration. But the two others were in Southern Florida, and Cocoa Walk was in Miami. So daring in Columbus with 40 inches of snow was, I mean, if it wasn't for, you know, Les's vision about, you know, ability to innovate and believe it was going to work, we would have never been able to pull it off.
Do you recall people in your line of work, in your industry, other developers, retail, do you recall them being skeptical?
Oh, many people.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure that should be on the show, but I mean, people, you say this guy is coming with a French accent, you know, from Florida, there's 40 inches of snow, and he's doing an open-air project, you know. I mean, they didn't realize that actually the French accent was hiding less behind the scenes. I was using me as the front person to do the crazy stuff.
In the 20 years since, what have been your biggest surprises about it?
I mean, obviously, the pleasant surprises was the draw of Easton. I mean, people don't understand that a regional mall draws for a portion of a city. We are drawing, I mean, when we draw our primary trade area, we draw the map of Ohio. I mean, we cannot do it with the map of Columbus. I mean, we draw 80 miles north-south, 40 miles east-west. That's our core. And then, when I say core, that's about 75% of our activity. 25% comes beyond that, the rest of the state and for other states. That was very unexpected. I mean, we did not realize we become such a draw from, you know, long distances. That was a surprise. And we also discovered that the public spaces, I mean, the people feeling well in the environment, and the experiential marketing we adopted, which was essentially we did not advertise come to Easton to buy things. We just organized events, you know, whether it's like tonight, The Wizard of Oz, you know, movie, which is throughout the summer, every Tuesday night there's a movie, and throughout the summer, every Wednesday or Thursday, there's a concert. Memorial Day to Labor Day, and every Friday before Thanksgiving, you know, there is the tree lighting. I mean, we created those traditions now, and people adopted those traditions, and that these are the ones we promote. I mean, we never come here and buy at Tiffany's. We come and say, come to the concert, or come to the Chalk Festival, or come to the Mac and Cheese Festival. You know, I mean, we always come up with things, and then people are happy in the environment we have.
Do you think that the events are key to Easton's success? What do you think are the fundamental ingredients to Easton's success?
The fundamental ingredient is the building a connection with our visitors, with our guests, who has an emotional content. It's not an intellectual exercise. If you go to Costco, it's a brain decision. You know, I need to buy all those things at the best possible price. We take the pickup truck and we load it and we bring it home. And I mean, frankly, that was before the internet. Now with the internet, I mean, if you want things that, you know, exactly are standards, you know, you just order them and you bring them home. So what is the reason you would come here? There has to be an emotional connection, because the dollars people spend at Easton are discretionary dollars. We don't sell necessities. We sell what is discretionary. So that means that people have a choice. I mean, discretionary dollar, they can spend them or not spend them. So in order to do that, we need to have an environment where you have an emotional connection. If you go out today at Easton, you will see our seasonal flowers are coming out. And for people who care about plants, you'll see that in a month or so, as the flowers bloom and grow and so forth, it's a pleasant place to be. I mean, it's colorful, it's things, the trees are big. You look outside the window, they don't look like little trees. And then you see the kids playing in the fountain, or there's a concert in the evening, you see people out there. I mean, this building that emotional connection. And the fact that we are anchored by dining and entertainment, if you notice, you can count on the fingers of one hand what I call the functional food we sell. We don't sell functional food. Everything we sell is celebration. You know, there's maybe three places where you can buy, a quick, food court kind of food. Everything else is celebration. You get a beer, it's a craft beer. You get with your friends for a drink, or you meet with your friends for lunch, or you come for dinner for your prom, or it's your first date. So these are all events. Each of them has a little emotional content attached to them. And those events occur in a place. So in your mind, you instinctively associate, that emotional experience to Easton. When we go for a metric, which is very, very important in the industry, many industries, called the Net Promoter Score, where you basically ask a person if they would recommend your project to a friend or to a family member or someone, on a scale of 10, 9 and 10 are promoters, 1 through 6 are detractors. So you remove the percentage of the people who promote you from people who detract, and that gives you your Net Promoter Score. Our score is over 70%. That's top in the country. A typical mall barely makes it to 40%. So that means there's an emotional connection here. People are proud or happy to have us in the town. And I think that is the reason of our success.
The dollar success of it, are your retailers pleased with their results? And can you characterize them in some way?
I would like to, there are multiple numbers. Yes, we have the most performing mall in the state of Ohio, easily. Even based on definition of the Midwest, we would be probably on the top two or three malls in the Midwest. And that's, start including Mall of America in Minneapolis and maybe a mall in Chicago. But if you look at those, we would be top. So that's a big number. And we probably collectively, I don't know if that's something you want to quote, but we do more sales than the two other malls combined in this town. And our food and beverage sales are, over $100 million. But also, we pay, the taxes we generate every year, I don't know if you have any idea about that, but I don't think many people do. We generate $140 million in taxes every year. This is not like since we opened or something. This is every year. You take our sales taxes, all the taxes we pay, property taxes and so forth. We generate $140 million in taxes. Before Easton, 20 years ago, those taxes were maybe $5 million, order of magnitude.
Right.
We want people to love us because for what we bring them, the pleasures of life, but also they have to know that we are a very good corporate citizen, in the community, and we make a difference.
Are there any disappointments you've had in Easton, any regrets? There have been some closings, of course, as any shopping center.
Yeah, our regrets are more technical in nature. The grand public would not be very interested. I would argue about if a square should have been 3 feet wider or in a building should have been slightly taller, And maybe a few more green spaces would have been maybe a bit more helpful. We should have gone more vertical on the offices. It's easy to say 20 years later that where I am right now should have been 2-story or 3 stories. But, at the time, that was daring enough. And the introduction of residential would have been something I would have gone for. Something I am very proud of, and that was not a surprise, but I'm kind of really not responding to your question about surprises. Maybe it was a surprise, is our Change for Charity program. It is in the background, people know it's here, but maybe we don't mention it enough. When we started, we wanted parking on the streets, so people could park close to the stores. But the problem is when you create those parallel parking spaces, and by the way, we made them extra size, so even an Ohioan could parallel park. So when we did those the problem was the store manager would come in the morning, park her car or his car, and then all day the car would be sitting there, so which totally defeats the purpose of having parking for people. So we said, let's put meters on them. But if you put meters on them, then you have to write tickets. If not, nobody puts money in the meters. You write tickets, and I get upset. All the parking is free in the project. Why this? So we said, we'll give the money to charity. And we created the Easton Community Foundation, basically collects those funds and, for giving them. I'm not going to do specific numbers, but we picked a charity at the time, and we thought that would be our charity forever, and we'll give the money to them. When we saw the monies, we start collecting, we said, oh my God, this is much more than we thought. We generate almost, $700,000-$900,000 a year, and we have been distributing, over probably $10 million since we started, and this is monies we have given away, and way more than $10 million. And then also we have raised, special events like Celebration for Life for the James and others, we have raised probably another $10-15 million. So suddenly that parking meter was to keep the store manager off the parking spaces, and give to the customer an alternative. and, you know, became, I mean, a source of doing well in the community, and we are very focused. You know, we don't give, you know, money to the opera or the fine arts museum. It's all family-oriented, children-oriented, education-oriented, and we give scholarships and things like that, very Boy Scouts, I mean, all kind of organization like this, and we have been supporting. That has been, I mean, a great satisfaction, obviously, for us, and also allowed us to, you know, be anchored in the community. So when people put money in the meter or even they get a ticket, I mean, I encourage people, don't use the valet, just get a ticket and you can at least tax deduct the ticket payment. You cannot deduct the valet payment.
I'll keep that in mind.
And sometimes we might miss you, then yeah, it's even free.
Yeah, right. Let me ask about the future. We've written about the urban district that's underway. There's other property, of course, available to be developed yet. Where do you see Easton in 5 years?
Yeah, we see clearly a bigger component of DNB's digital native brands, you know, being in our project, because the digital native brands now are more and more realizing the need for, you know, brick and mortar presence. We already good representation, you know, between people like Peloton, you know, Marin Layer and Untuckit, etc. But more of them are going to come because basically we deliver very high traffic counts and they like to be in places where they can see physical traffic and acquire new customers. So we're going to see more of that happening. And with their arrival, the whole format of leasing is going to change. I mean, the leases will get shorter, you know, there will be a bigger churn of tenants because there is where there is a world of, say, 300-400 specialty retailers, of which would pick 250 with this new digital native brands or digitally active brands who go deeper in their categories. Now there's thousands of retailers, and there's no way a retail project can have 1,000 tenants. So how do we do that? You know, so we'll have to create different formats, different ways of, you know, introduce them to the customer. And so this adaptation is going to be our biggest challenge, you know, going forward. And
yeah, you know, that raises the whole question of the changing retail landscape. How has that impacted Easton, and how will it impact moving forward? You talk about digitally active brands, that's one way it would impact, but in what other ways has the changing retail landscape impacted?
You know, it's very difficult to be definitive on this subject because we are, I mean, at the there's the customer who is changing, and we all read anecdotes in the magazine, in the papers, and we understand that the millennials are different than the Gen X's, and the Gen Z's coming now are different as well. For example, they don't care about brands, they like about durability, they don't like throwaway clothes, for example, the Gen Z's and so on. So that's one layer of observation we need to have, understand what they do. Then you have the retailers. The retailer then observe those generations and adjust their products according to those generations, and also the technology change, you know, the distribution channels and how you satisfy the needs and so forth. Then we come at the third layer, then we need to look at the retailers who are looking at the customers and try to guess what they need and how to adjust for them. So because the retailers are in a major flux right now, I mean, they are again trying to adopt to the new generations, and the change are happening faster too, so they need to change faster, and they are trying to find their footing, you know, in this changing world. I mean, and also the technology. I mean, how to be, you know, omni-channel retailer and be able to present at every level. I mean, today you take a Target store, 60-70% of the online purchases are distributed from the stores. I mean, that's a full integration of brick and mortar and, you know, and technology and online. So, and we are observing now retailers and try to be responsive to their needs. So, for example, I mean, the kind of thing that's going to happen is, you know, pick up, you know, from store, you know, is going to become very common. Delivery from the restaurants become very common. I mean, Uber Eats coming and picking all over our place. Now is the community adjust to that need? I mean, will we have ghost restaurants? Maybe we will, maybe we'll not. I mean, we'll decide if we want, it's appropriate for us to have those. And I mean, retailers themselves, you know, we now as a developer mall, you need to offer them a services for their returns. You know, I mean, you know, can we take their returns and take care of them? Or can we accept boxes that arrive and then allow people to try them and then so do the tailoring for them on premise? I mean, there's going to be lots of changes like this, you know. And I mean, as you know, Easton during the last 20 years has changed continuously. I mean, we never stop. If you look at your archives, I mean, every article written about Easton and every tenant, we continuously change. We never, you know, we always always try to be the most current version of what's going on. We don't extend tenants just to, because it saves money to keep the same tenant. If we feel, I mean, like Virgin Records, we had the first Virgin in the whole state of Ohio, and then you pull the plug on them when we saw the end was coming, well before the record stopped becoming popular. You know, we replaced them with Crate and Barrel. And we continuously adjust the food venues. I mean, today, I mean, where 20 years ago, Cheesecake Factory was a great acquisition, today North Star, Contado is a great acquisition, or Hot Chicken Takeover are great acquisitions. Very different way of looking at things, you know, and I think that will continue, and we are going to find a bigger number of indies, you know, on fashion, and we'll see more and more local restaurants, you know, and we need to adjust to that.
That's a perfect segue to something I want to ask you about. Easton has become sort of a nurturing ground for a lot of local stores and especially restaurants. You mentioned a couple there. Is that by design on your part, or is that sort of the way you think of keeping East?
Absolutely by design, but also being responsive to the trends. You know, I mean, you will see in the urban district, for example, we are opening a Forbidden Root, a brewery, and that's a very unique transaction. We went and surveyed maybe 35 different brewers in the state and around the state surrounding us, and finally we find that brewery in Illinois that we felt in Chicago that we felt would be unique enough to justify to bring them here. And we could have done a more traditional deal, economically much more favorable to us, but we felt that we needed to bring that newness to the market, and we took some risk doing it. I mean, when we brought True Food Kitchen, that's the only chain we bring. True Food Kitchen has barely 30 restaurants around the country, maybe 35. So we went and grabbed them because we wanted them. And then we turned down other restaurants who would have loved to be here, you know, because we tried to continuously to curate to where things are going rather than, you know, to do the most financially effective deal. However, those bets always pay off. Over the long term, actually, it works much better for us.
When you look around the industry now, who do you think is setting who's the gold standard in shopping centers, leaving Easton aside?
I mean, I'm glad you are seeing this without bragging about it. I mean, we are one of the, forget the gold standards, but we are one of the standards. I mean, when people want to see innovation, want to see creativity, although we are 20 years old, they still come here, not only from the United States, but also from abroad. In the United States, I think Rick Caruso in California would be a developer we respect a lot. I mean, his attention to detail, his eye for design is really remarkable. I mean, these are the projects like The Grove or Americana. Then after that, I mean, they are one of retailers in different cities, you know, who have done interesting projects. Maybe, I mean, the projects like South Lake in Dallas, you know, or Rancho Cucamonga, Victoria Gardens in Rancho Cucamonga, California. I mean, there are a few projects like this. But I mean, for being in an average city, I mean, I hate calling Columbus average, but I mean, we are not in New York, right? Hudson Yards open, it's all over the national papers, and everybody's talking about it, etc. We are in Columbus, and we'll do more sales than, you know, Hudson Yards, there's no doubt. But, you know, so, I mean, for being humble in the middle of Ohio, I mean, in a state growing slowly, you know, and I think we are a very good reference for many people, that we are a much more reproducer, an example they can reproduce, which is relevant to them. Going and admiring, you know, Hudson Yards in Manhattan doesn't give you a solution for what to do in Cincinnati or Dayton.
If you were to reproduce this in Kansas City, Milwaukee, Cincinnati, Indianapolis, cities that might be more our peer, I guess, would it look like this?
Yeah. I mean, actually, Milwaukee, Dayton, Kansas City are all cities where we did projects. And when sometime Columbusites or others happen to be in those cities and walk into those projects, when they come back, they say, did you develop this project? Because there are very similarities, you know. Yeah, it's very similar. I mean, on those projects, obviously, we went residential much more aggressively than today. I mean, all those projects have hundreds of apartments in them. At Easton, we are only doing it now, but no, very similar. And I mean, frankly, the champion of them is Milwaukee. I mean, they're talking about 14 inches of snow, but also talking about temperatures. You know, this is like 50 miles south of the Green Bay Packers, you know, where they play, you know, so you can imagine. So it works even there.
You came here 25 years ago, and you walked through this farmland or rode through it.
Yeah.
Common sense at the time might have said, oh, you put your stores out by the freeway to get the frontage. And I think Easton, you know, you designed it differently, inward in a way. Can you describe what your thought process
is? You know, first, I mean, this is where the credit is due to Les. because I can show you a binder here of about 200 sketches we made before we put Easton where we put Easton. And at the beginning, like every conventional developer, we went to the corner. You know, we said we are going to put the mall on the corner of the freeway and Morse Road. I mean, that's where you want to be. That's where the malls go. You know, I mean, so you can see them from the freeway and everything else. And then it's Les who looked at the site. He said, that's a mistake. We need to move it to the center of the land we own so it activates everything around us. So that came really from his vision, truly, to put it there. And then obviously the typical objections we get from people saying, well, nobody's going to see department stores, they're going to be hidden and so forth. His point always was, I mean, do you see them in Northland? You know, from what freeway do you see Northland Mall? You know, I mean, there are plenty of examples of that. So that's the way, you know, actually it moved to the center of the site. But I mean, even for him, I mean, well, we don't want to make everything personal, but I mean, basically for L Brands, you know, to decide to even not only locate it here, but to bet on an open air project, someone, you know, had a vision and they believed in that vision, you know, and we could have never done it without their support.
Can I ask you a question about terminology? I mean, there are so many phrases now that get kicked around in your industry. Would you call this a lifestyle center? Would you call it a town center?
Frankly, people call them more now. These are mixed-use projects, mixed-use town centers. Yeah. That's the vocabulary now, mixed-use town centers, because they get more and more mixed-use and more vertical, you know. And frankly, in the new ones, the retail component is shrinking significantly because the retail of tomorrow is not what it is today. I mean, you will see the same thing happening in Polaris, the same thing happening in Tuttle, where basically those environments are going to become mixed-use over in the future.
You talk about Polaris, even now they're opening up, of course. They've already opened up one end, they've opened up another. They're trying to get residential.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they are working with Brent Crawford, you know, I mean, creating a whole town center basically attached to it with residential hotels and everything else, and to basically shore, you know, the retail core.
Do you think when you look around Columbus, forget the broader landscape, but when you look around Columbus, how do you think Easton has influenced Columbus? Shopping, growth, in other ways?
You should maybe ask other people, you know, or maybe you should make those observations, although I know an American journalist doesn't give opinions. You should find other people to quote. But, I mean, I think that at the same way we influenced, you know, national retail development formats, this project has been a leader in that. Even international projects I can mention who are copies of Easton or inspired by Easton. The same way we are impacted, you know, Columbus. I mean, I think people get more comfortable with open air. I mean, look what's happening in Dublin. I mean, it took 10 years, but I mean, or 12, 15 years of Easton before people pulled the trigger on it. But I don't think they would have dared if it wasn't, you know, for Easton. And today, the expansion of Polaris, I mean, the way they are trying to reposition that, I mean, that's very relevant to this. But that even at a smaller scale, I mean, the way Gahanna is thinking about its village center, the way New Albany is thinking about the village center, the way Worthington thinking about village center, the way Westerville thinking about village center, these are all inspired by this, you know, street-driven, pedestrian-driven, pedestrian-friendly, mixed-use environments. So, and we are fortunate to live in a city with multiple centers, and every one of them now, I mean, Grove City, I mean, our example, I mean Newark, Granville, Lancaster, I mean, everywhere now, you know, people are trying to recreate this, but where Easton was created artificially in a cornfield, like you mentioned, then many people now are trying to reposition, you know, the assets. Interestingly, they're coming then to us again, asking us, so how do you go about this? You know, it's not as simple.
Where'd the name come from?
From Les. We hired a consultant in New York, and he went through the exercise, and we got over 100 names organized in different categories, you know, the constellations, the fruits, the animals, the street names, English names, Spanish names, these names, the other names, and so forth. Nothing was kind of working, you know, I mean, we are trying to intellectualize it, you know, where you kind of force something, you can't find a solution. We didn't know. I mean, there were opinions, discussions, and then one morning I got a phone call from Georgetown telling me Les wants to call it Easton. And we immediately felt that was a good name. It's east side of town. Easton is short for East Town, as you know, historically. So basically, we said, perfect, we're on the east side of town. Easton sounds good to the point, you know, and was good. Went to the consultants, say thank you for your work, but no needed. The name is going to be Easton.
Easton was not on the list?
It happens. I mean, you know, that's the way things happen. I mean, he might have looked at a Pennsylvania map. I don't know. There's an Eastern Pennsylvania. He might have noticed it. Or maybe he realized that there's Westerns in Florida, which is West towns, obviously. I mean, you know, all the towns are towns, basically, you know. So he came up with the idea. I mean, you know, that was his idea.
The residential will be...
I mean, there's lots of residential, but I do not know how much we want to... I mean, I'm not sure what we want to do. I mean, clearly, I mean, our goals, I mean, over the long term, is to have literally thousands of residential units here. I mean, 3,000 to 5,000 units. And when I mean residential, we are talking about apartments, townhomes, condominiums, high-rises, low-rises. I mean, we are going to create a true... I mean, you are right. I mean, the part we did not discuss is the evolution of Easton. When you said 5 years from now, maybe I should have taken the clue then. Because going forward, we want to detach ourselves from a commercial district, retail and offices. We want to become a neighborhood. That will require a big transformation in our state of mind and how we think about everything. I mean, do we need affordable housing? Do we need churches? Do we need playgrounds? Do we need childcare centers? What range of housing do you want to offer? You know, and because I mean, one ideal dream would be we have 30,000 to 40,000 people working at Easton. So if you wanted to lodge 30,000 to 40,000 people, concentric circles from Easton, say within 2 miles from here, there's plenty of land, what would be the mix? I mean, would it be a bunch of single guys and girls, you know, who want just apartments? Will they be parents with kids? What would be the obstacle for them to be here? Because there's not a church to go to or a childcare to watch the kids for? Or would be because the school is not good enough that we need to deal with. So, I mean, this opens a whole way of rethinking right now. So we are going through the brainstorming on this. That's a very early idea. Try to figure out how we can become a true neighborhood. Because if you make it too one-sided, I mean, too plasticky, then it doesn't become real either. I mean, today we know we can accommodate both ends of the range. We can accommodate what we call the next-gen apartments, like what you see in Short North downtown. And we can accommodate the empty nester, which there's not many of them in Columbus, but there's going to be more and more of them as people of my age, you know, start thinking, changing. But the middle is the question, you know, couple, two kids, should they be around here somewhere? If all the schools was like to keep school, that would be no problem. Our problem is going to be traffic. You know, we don't want to become, you know, like Polaris, Gemini, or Dublin, you know, so we need to be able to handle the traffic. So, I mean, we have plans for expanding the freeway. We have plans, we hope future transit is going to help, you know, so.
Jaromir, thank you for your time. Thanks for talking about Easton. You can learn more about Easton on its 20th anniversary at dispatch.com and in the Columbus Dispatch.